7 exactly, in case somebody wants to leave or get up, so we'll call this meeting in order. In attendance, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Hollins, Councilwoman Diller, Councilman Smiley, Councilman Cartier, Councilman Tackett, and myself. Angelique Marvellous, my aide, is taking the minutes. Do we have an approval?
Motion to approve.
Second.
A motion's been made and second, approval of March 3rd's meeting.
Aye.
Accepting and say aye.
Aye.
Approved. Okay. We're going to go into the updating of, we have two things on today, updating the Capitol building projects and the Townsend and Sewer Agreement people have asked about. So without further ado, we'll turn it out to General Manager Wayne Merritt.
If we could, I think the agenda has capital projects first. Would you like to go?
Yes, that's fine.
And that would be Tracy Searles, who's prepared to talk about Townsend.
Hi, Tracy Searles. Very short presentation on Townsend. But if council has further questions, it might be worth at some future point to have land use present as well, because I think there are a lot of land use issues surrounding it. But there was the article a couple weeks ago in the paper about how the town of Townsend is seeking additional sewer capacity from the county, and they have been denied. In 2001, the county entered into a sewer agreement with Townsend, under which we are to be the exclusive provider of sewer service. That agreement also gives the county and this council the authority, not just the authority, but they have to approve annexations for them to occur. And I think you've seen some of those come before you. That agreement provided 270,000 roughly gallons per day of capacity, and of that, the town has about 80,000 gallons still left unused. The issue is, at this time, they've proposed annexations starting in 2010 that would extend the town up to Middletown. It incorporates about 615 acres. If you look at it, the land they'd like to annex is about as large as the town itself. And that land is currently zoned SR. It's not in one of the county growth zones. So the issue is not so much sewer as the county believing that the 2001 agreement gave adequate capacity for the town's needs, and to extend development into these SR areas doesn't really go with our comp plan, our growth plan, and our plans to kind of coordinate infrastructure in that area. Does that make sense? I don't think some of that was discussed a lot in the newspaper. It's much broader than a sewer, you know, us running pipes to Townsend. It's a little bit broader than that. So.
And Councilman Red has joined us. Councilman Cartier.
The SR zoning category, to my knowledge, is extremely low density residential. Mm-hmm. And it really is kind of intended to be septic.
It is. It's suburban reserve. It's septic, you know, not to be sewered. And I won't get the densities right, but it's something, you know, much less density than
acres.
What you're going
right.
to get. Right, exactly.
One house per 2 acres or something, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think, you know, we would like to focus growth in the central core. That's where we've invested our money on infrastructure, where the state is. So, you know, also the concern that that pulls units away from that growth area. So I think it's more of a planning concern.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? All right, well, thank you very much for any of those questions. All right, we'll go on to the Capitol Building Projects update.
Sure, I'm Steve Rubel, Project Administrator with Special Services. I want to thank you for the opportunity to give you an update on some of our key capital projects.
He's running Portland, I shut my mind.
Those being Carousel, Rockwood, Glasgow, and the Odessa Paramedic Station, Brookline Library. You're welcome to ask any questions throughout. The first projects are at Carousel. As you probably know, we've been doing a lot of work out at Carousel, including our maintenance staff. We've just done some fabulous work out there, renovating and addressing a lot of the needs assessment work at all of the key buildings out there. As far as capital projects, we have one project that will comprise two key buildings. One being the indoor arena, and the second being the horse hay barn. So the first part of that being the indoor arena, For that building, we're basically addressing everything that's listed in our building needs assessment. So that basically includes all of the necessary renovations, you know, needed for that building. So there are going to be roofing repairs, ventilation. We're replacing the insulation at the ceiling area. We're replacing the misting system. We're doing handicap accessibility upgrades. We're doing some work at the bleachers. It goes on and on and on. There's just a lot of work there, including, you know, one of the ongoing things that has happened at the indoor arena has been a lot of corrosion that's happened at the base of the building and doors and the metal exterior. So one of the things we're going to be doing is recreating the exterior around that building, replacing doors. And so moving forward, we shouldn't have any more corrosion issues. So that building should be in pretty good shape.
Question, Mr. Red, I had...
Yeah, a couple of them. You say that on the corrosion. What are you talking about on the corrosion? What's, metal on the outside of the building?
Yeah, the exterior of the building. What's happening is the grade slopes, you know, I guess especially at the north side of the northeast side of the building, the grade just slopes right to the building.
Right.
So the water just comes right, hits the doors, hits the exterior metal. And if you go out there at the base of the building, you just see extensive corrosion.
So what are you going to replace it with?
So we're going to replace all the doors, all the frames, and selective replacement at the exterior metal with the same materials.
Well, why would you do that? Why would you do that?
As opposed to what?
Aluminum. It's less corrosive.
Well, when it
and
comes
if you
to...
Put, and if you put paint on it, it's even more less corrosive.
When it comes to metal, you really don't want to mix metals, so you want to use the same type of metal that's out there now. You start mixing metals, you get galvanic action, you start getting even more.
So only if you don't put bitumastic on it. If you put bitumastic on it, which is like a tar, underneath it won't corrode, because we've done it with copper against aluminum, copper with stainless steel and everything, and it hasn't corroded in years. In fact, it's still there. And that's been about 40 years.
Yeah. Well, what the architects are showing makes a lot of sense in just replacing with the same type of metal, doing selective renovations at the exterior metal, and replacing the doors. You certainly don't want to put in aluminum doors and frames. You want steel doors and frames there. It's a building that takes a lot of abuse. You get lawnmowers, a lot of activity around the base of that building. Aluminum has much more deflection. It cannot withstand the kind of abuse that steel can. So I think steel is the right choice to make.
It all depends on what type of steel you use, too, because you could use galvanized or you can use just plain steel. Plain steel is not as good as galvanized.
Yeah, we certainly don't want to use any low, you know, light gauge metal there, because that, like, again, that building takes a lot.
That's my field. I've been doing it for 40 years, longer than that. I've been working with that for years.
Yeah, so you know what kind of abuse that building.
Yeah, and I know what you can do, what you can't do with metal. The other question is with the handicap. What are you doing with the handicap? Is in what?
Yeah, well, one of the things right now, although we've got bleachers that can support, you know, handicap access, the apron area leading up to the building, it's not really conducive to wheelchair access. So we're providing a hardscape path to the building, into the building that leads you to the bleachers. So that'll provide a much more effective, much more conducive path for, you know, wheelchairs to get into the building and see the event.
Now, is that for the handicap riding?
It will be able to be used for that, yeah.
Because there's not much going on up there anymore.
There's not, and they have a stand that they use to allow disabled persons to mount the horses. Right now they're not using that, you're right. So we're actually going to add bleachers. So we'll have one set of bleachers that will provide handicap accessibility, and then an additional set of bleachers. So that'll give us a lot more occupancy. I think they can use one set of bleachers for the disabled people to mount the horses, the ones that are handicap accessible, and they won't need that existing mounting stand they have. So.
General Manager Wayne Merritt, do you have something?
I don't think it was mentioned, but that we'll be regrading.
I was going to say, yeah.
Kind of implicit in that, so we're going to repair, we're going to try to make sure the situation is working correctly.
Councilman Smiley?
Yeah, that was my first question. You know, I recognize I don't have an engineering degree. Wouldn't you change the grading to try to eliminate the cause of the problem before you repair the problem? And second, I'm not sure what kind of steel they had when Roy Rogers was around, but are you keeping the Western motif? Is that part of what's going on here as well?
Part of the upgrades will involve repairing the wood behind that Western facade and repainting that, because it's received a lot of rain and hasn't received as much maintenance because it's kind of behind, what you would see.
It's a $2 million upgrade. What would you guess the additional monetary is in keeping that motif to try to?
Well, as long as we can get into a really solid maintenance plan and just get out there every few years and just keep it painted, it shouldn't cost that much to maintain. It's like when you let it go.
That doesn't give me any comfort, because now we're maintaining it every year.
Well, I think once
we can't get parks cut every year. But we're going to make sure the Porsches have something nice to run around in. I understand what you're doing. I just think we got places that more of the public uses where the money could be better spent. Myself, that looks like that would be an ideal place to bring all the farmers markets together. All right, but I hope you do the grading before you do the building restructuring.
The project budget that you see there, $2 million, will be for both projects combined, just so you understand that. We should be complete by March 2016, as long as we can get through the bidding process. The horse hay barn.
Councilman Cordier, you're still doing that.
What percentage of the exterior sheathing are you going to remove and replace, do you figure?
It's a very small percentage.
Small portion, okay.
Yeah.
It's only $1.5 million.
The horse hay barn addresses two key areas that are lacking right now in the existing horse hay barn. No storage space, and currently I think the horse hay barn, the existing horse hay barn, has about 14 stalls. The new horse hay barn would have 22 stalls, one of them being a mechanical room. So it's going to provide many more stalls for the horses. There'll be automatic heated watering stations. It'll have ventilation, lighting. It'll have selective hose bibs throughout that can be used. A misting system, sprinkler system. That misting system will be able to provide water and insect repellent as necessary for the horses. In addition, there'll be a Western facade to match the facade across the courtyard.
Councilor Reddit and Councilor Smallwood.
Thank you. You said ventilation in the stalls?
Fans.
What type of ventilation?
It'll be fans.
Fans?
Councilman Smiley?
So open the window would be cheaper, but anyway. Are you expanding the building or reconfiguring the stalls?
We're expanding the size of the building.
Councilwoman Kirkpatrick?
So if we're going from 16 stalls to 22, are we getting more horses or are we leasing stall space?
I think it's going from 14 to 22. I don't know whether they're simply using existing horses or whether they're considering procuring additional horses. I don't know.
As long as we're not leasing the faithful friends.
Steve, while we're on carousel, there's always been a problem with pigeons and so forth. Are we supposed to put in interior, vinyl, the soffits and stuff?
Yeah, that's always been a problem when you walk through, the stables and some of the other buildings. We're constructing the stalls continuously through smooth ceiling panels and details at the perimeter that would not allow
a couple months difference.
So this is part of that project?
As far as the horse hay barn, you are not going to see pigeons roosting in there. The indoor arena, we're also sensitive to that issue too. So when the new insulation goes in and mesh, we're very just sensitive to the perimeters, which is where raccoons and pigeons and other animals are getting in there. We're going to seal those up tight, and we won't see the roosting.
Relocate them to the petting zoo.
Okay, anybody else on this? Move on.
The Rockwood Mansion, again, here's a site that you've seen some activity in recent years. The completion of the roof project that we did, now that we know that's secured that area of the building envelope, we're now able to move on to some key projects there, including the mansion, the winter garden, and the gardener's house. We're putting those out combined in one package. They each essentially have the same kind of trades. The overall budget for all of those projects is $2 million. The mansion will address two key needs assessment issues. One is the extensive wood rot that's happening around that building, and it's pretty bad if you've been up there. So we'll be able to address that, and then also the plaster degradation that's happened over the years with water penetration getting into the building.
Mr. Chairman. Just go back to Rockwood. You know, if we're going to look at the historical trim elements, wood trim elements that are severely rotted, I think one of the things we should consider, you know, I have some experience with this, is using composite products that you can mill to replicate original, you know, details, and you know, take care of the rot for the next 50 years.
Yeah, we agree. We think that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
We're going to use a combination of Spanish cedar wood, but then also some fiberglass reinforced plastic.
Right.
I think from a company named Anytas, but there are a number of companies that do this.
Yeah.
That's going to minimize the amount of maintenance we have to spend there, and we're not going to have to replace this stuff, you know, in our lifetime.
We agree.
We're going to try and do that as much as we can.
I did two restorations of two homes that had historical pilasters and pediments that were severely compromised, and as a company out of New Jersey that milled out of solid PVC these pieces, and they were exact replicas.
Yeah.
And when you put them on the building,
you can't tell the difference.
At all.
Yeah.
And they're paintable and they don't rot.
Yep.
So, you know, here's an opportunity. I think if we're going to get the maximum value out of this renovation, you know, really explore the use of those materials. They've come a long way. And the thing is, that they are able to get a very exacting milling results because they use a computer-driven milling machine. It takes a CAD drawing from the original wood, you know, detail, molding, and so forth, and it spits out an exact replica.
We agree.
So,
yeah.
Councilor Rueda.
Thank you. All this work that we're doing up there, we're going to do up there. How much of this ground up there that the caterer says we can use or that we can't use or whatever, that we have to check with them first? Is the mansion included?
I believe that we're not doing any work at the visitors center.
I know,
as
but
part of these projects.
There's been times that so many outside of the ground and so many other buildings, we had to ask the caterer.
Yeah, in getting the design complete for these three projects and working with community services, I have not had to work at all through that caterer. So I don't believe they have any connection with these projects. So the winter garden is the second of three buildings or areas that we're touching here. The winter garden, if you're familiar with that, it's a very small area. It's maybe about 15 by 15 feet on the side of the Rockwood Mansion. It's a glazed area where they sometimes move plants in for the winter. Not to be confused with a conservatory. So we're doing renovations there, including replacing the glazed roof and some carpentry repairs. And again, we're using as much as we can the plastic basically in place of the wood. Gardner's Cottage, this is selective needs assessment items. We're basically trying to address all of the building envelope issues. So we're going to be replacing the roof, replacing windows, repairing windows, regrading so that we don't have water going against the building. Some interior work, including replacing some structural joists that are in very bad shape. And that's basically it. I think there's a little bit of landscaping that's happening for that one, too. The conservatory is a separate project, but still at Rockwood. We think it's going to come out to be $600,000. That is going to be a total renovation of that structure, but primarily it's the wood rot that we're seeing there, some glazing repairs, so a little bit of electrical work.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
This, just to offer a little commentary, this conservatory project is something that is extremely historically valuable and important. There are very few of these, Victorian era conservatories left in the whole country. There may be even as few as five or six, and the rebuilding and renewal of this is a real critical historical element, maintaining historic integrity of Rockwood. So I hope we're able to be successful with that.
It's a really beautiful extension of the building. Yeah. If you've gone up there and you've seen it, it just really stands out. It's impressive. And then at Glasgow Park, we're going to be doing phase one of three possible phases at the Hermitage. Right now, we've fully abated all the buildings there, and we have demoed all of the buildings that were in our plan. So we're ready to start phase one. That's going to be $3.8 million. That will, I guess this doesn't really have a cursor.
I got some cursing for it.
Basically, what we're going to be doing is doing exterior renovations at the main house, and then exterior and interior renovations of what's called the bank barn. That will serve as the key vendor space for the farmers market activities. We're also going to be providing a comfort station, which will be toilet facilities and a canopy area, and then supporting parking and drives for the site, as well as a lot of site work and utility work to support that phase. So we're hoping to get started there pretty soon, and get completed by November, because we've got some key activities in December at site.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Swan.
What's the proposed usage of the house when it's done?
The house right now, we're not going to renovate the interior in this phase. So the exterior of the house could be used for activities. There's a really nice porch on that house. So that porch could be used for various activities. I mean, one thing I know that was brought up for a Christmas event would be maybe to have Santa on the porch and have a Christmas tree and have kids come up. But it could be used for anything. The area between the bank barn and the house is kind of neat. There's a circular area between those two that could be really perfect for a tree and just various activities, whatever can come.
Are there any revenue prospects for the use of that house that would generate revenue?
Yeah, we will be able to generate revenue through the farmer's market activities specifically.
Let's talk about the house. I know the farmer's market will, and if we can get the right pay toilets, the comfort station will. But the house, is there any projections for any way that?
The interior of the house, no, but it's possible we could get vendors on the porch or do some sort of activity around the exterior of the house that could generate revenue. If you notice, all of these small squares are allocated spaces for vendors. So vendors could set up on the site and sell products, and that would generate revenue. So,
General Manager Merritt?
General Manager of Services. I would defer long-term community services on this one. That could become a satellite facility for community services, summer camps and things of that nature, long term. Right now, the interior is not on our planning board for anything to do until we complete this current project.
Okay. Right.
Councilman Holmes, you didn't have your hand up, did you?
No, I did not.
Okay, I didn't.
The next project we're doing is the Odessa EMS station.
Right.
This is going to be a really neat project. I mean, it's going to provide a building in an area where we don't have, you know, EMS, administrative areas and vehicle bays. So this is going to serve a really key area in southern Newcastle County to make EMS even more efficient and more responsive. It'll be a 12,000 square foot facility. Currently, it will have three bays, expandable to four bays. We'll have some key conference room training rooms that can provide up to 80-plus staff. It'll have a small lounge and kitchen, a small fitness area, and locker room space, support facilities, and a number of offices. That project is slated to be complete by December 2016. We're still in the middle of design. And the final project, you've recently, I think, heard a presentation on the library, so I'll be fairly brief on this, but you know, we're still looking at a $22.9 million budget, slated to be at least have the grand opening by December 2016. It'll have all of the normal services that a library would have, as well as a lot of special spaces, including a vintage area, a bookitarium, Lego room. It just goes on and on and on. There's a cafe that would be part of the library, performance space, which we call Black Box. There are probably a lot of libraries around the world that have some of the things that we're going to be providing in this library, excuse me, but there's no library in the world that will have everything that we're providing. So it's going to be a pretty special space, very cutting edge, technology-wise. That's the latest perspective that we have on the library. And we have a few other ones that I think you've seen.
Question. Let me text this chairman.
My phone's not working, but the calculator is, that's $532 a square foot?
It includes all soft costs, land costs.
Okay. Land costs as well.
Yeah, okay. I think when you look at the direct construction costs related to the size of the library, I think we're around 200 to 300.
Yeah,
it's right in the ballpark. Yeah,
that's a little bit.
That's right.
Councilman Small and then Councilman.
Question I hadn't asked before, so you're the lucky gentleman. Well, you may have. Has there been an evaluation of the projected, at least in the beginning, annual operating cost?
I believe that has been calculated. I'm going from memory here. I think the operating costs that are listed that are going to the state are $300,000, but I can check on that for you. Usually they're based around $6 a square foot, I think. But I can get those figures for you.
But we're talking personnel, all
yeah,
programs.
Staff.
I think that's probably a little low. Okay.
Councilman Cartier?
It's certainly going to become, I think, a key key to renewing this underserved and troubled area of New Castle County. And, you know, I'm really impressed by the design and the thoughtfulness of the site. I guess my major concern is that's a pretty hefty number. How are we doing with the cost split between state government and the county government? And also, I know from my experience with the Claymont Library, you know, I had a very sophisticated and active friends group that also raised, you know, over $600,000 to help fund that library. So how are we doing with the capital share costs on this project?
And the friends group, I know, is just getting going. I'm sure they're sort of snowball as things go along. And we're going after as much money from the state as we can get right now. Again, I can get you those figures. We know right now it's, you know, like pulling teeth, you know, to get money from the state. But it's a pretty substantial number that we're going
with. Okay.
It's not small change.
I mean, the understanding is pretty much that I've been familiar with is that we split the costs pretty much between the state and the county, and whatever the friends can raise is a you know, additional cost sharing. They go after as much as they can.
Yeah, most of the costs that we can go after, you know, the stay for request money for, you know, where we get that 50-50 split, and we're going after that as much as we can. It's probably a little bit less overall project percentage wise compared to Claymont, just because, you know, we're trying to be practical considering, you know, the economic situation. But I can get you those numbers. It's certainly not a small change.
Councilman Small, any?
Yeah, I just want to say, I don't know who's stepped into the shoes now, but unfortunately the founder and had been current chair of that French group was Mae Jarman, who recently passed away. Mm-hmm. So there's a big void there in that area.
Yeah. Councilwoman Kilpatrick?
I thought when we did Hocus and Kirkwood and Bear, we had to do a third from the state, a third from the county, and a third had to be raised by the friends, and anything that went beyond that third they could use for escrow for other things as they went, the friends could, as they went along. Recently, was your library 50-50 between state and county, or was it third? It was 50-50?
Pretty much. The friends, that approach where the friends would take one-third, we've never even come close to approaching that. I mean, I think for Claymont, we were between $250,000 and $500,000. They're still generating some money with the donor brick revenues.
And this might be more of a community service question, but did we not have a grant writer at one point that was helping friends groups write grants for these things?
Claymont, I believe, had a grant writer. It might have been Daniel Sullivan. I think we're doing the same thing with this library.
And we had a consultant that was brought to help write grants. Yeah.
I think we're right at the onset of that, so we haven't seen anything come to fruition, but we should be seeing some grants as the, you know, the year goes on.
Because I guess part of the question that I've been asked is, because this is not a full library, it's a library plus so is the state going to look at 50% of this as being 50% of what the square footage of the library portion is versus 50% of the entire building?
We're going after everything except for the square footage that comprises the cafe. So the library is at 43,000 square feet right now. The cafe is about 3,000 square feet. We're basically trying to go after that 40,000 square feet of the state to try and get as much money as we can.
Okay.
Anybody else? Oh, very good.
Thanks for the opportunity.
No problem. Thank you. General Manager, Mr. Mayor.
One thing I want to caution everybody. When we talk about the dates we think these projects are done, there's a couple variables, and not the least of which, particularly reference to Councilman Cartier's comments about the conservatory, is ensuring that we are have no glitches in the bidding process and getting vendors. Early on, we've had a difficult time, Stephen going into detail, of getting people who qualify under the current code to do the work at the conservatory because of its historic nature. So we may have to go to conversation with the council about who get the five vendors.
Steve Rubel, Special Services. The first round of bidding for the conservatory, we received no bids. And the rest of the Rockwood projects, the mansion, Winter Garden, Gardener's Cottage, we're out for bid right now. Don't expect to get any bids on those projects. Right now, what we've done is created a set of pre-qualifications that require the contractors, or at least the carpenters, to have historical preservation experience. And I think what you tend to see, and our architects have gone after all of the historical preservation carpenters, none of those have the apprenticeship within their company where they can meet our apprenticeship guidelines. And you know, there's no publication out there that will tell you or recommend for a historical structure to use a carpenter who does not have the historical preservation experience. So HRB is, you know, strongly recommended that. All your federal publications recommend that. So we developed those pre-qualifications. We're confident that the carpenters that we bring on board with the historical preservation experience are going to either be at or exceed the quality of any contractor that we would bring in with apprenticeship, you know, background. But right now with conservatory, we've received no bids because those historical preservation contractors have opted out.
Councilman Small and Councilman Hall.
I just want to make an observation, maybe I'm wrong, but wasn't this part of the issue with the Friends group, that they weren't meeting, aside from prevailing wage, they weren't going to meet all the requirements that would fall in, such as the apprenticeship program and all that?
Well, the Steve Rubel Special Services, the Friends group, if they had handled the project, were going to have much more leeway. I don't believe they would have had to abide by apprenticeship guidelines. There were certain legal aspects or concerns that we had with them handling the project, and us being partly involved, Special Services, that it was decided to make sure that we have Special Services manage that project and bid it out. So with that, you know, comes those requirements that we have to follow. Right now, we're just, because of the historical preservation experience that we're requiring, and I think that's the right thing to do here. We're just seeing people not coming to the table.
My understanding was that's what they were requiring too, but our requirements, though well intended, are creating roadblocks to getting this, is what I'm hearing.
Councilman Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Councilman Smalley touched on my concern. I want to make certain I understand this correctly. Because we have a requirement for the apprenticeship, is that the reason why these carpenters are opting out? Am I hearing that correctly?
I spoke to the architect of the conservatory renovation, which is Friends and Friends, and that's not to be confused with the Friends. It's FRENS. And I also spoke with the architect for the three other Rockwood projects. They spoke to all of the prospective bidders on this project. They all have said they're opting out of bidding because of the apprenticeship guidelines. They cannot meet those.
And I think that issue needs to be revisited. I just don't think that we should have policies that are getting in the way of moving forward. What is the real benefit to the county if we're adopting policy that is going to be an obstacle to getting projects completed? I just think something is fundamentally wrong with that. And I've had a couple of conversations around these issues with Tony being in the room. But I think that we need to actively take a look at this and make the changes where they need to be made. I've heard it said that it's easy to have these apprenticeships for anybody who want it. I'm not convinced that's the case, but I do know that in too many instances, in one instance, it's too many as far as I'm concerned, that this particular provision is serving as a roadblock to getting things done, and council has a responsibility to address this. So if we talk about it and we are assuming that it's easy, but we haven't done anything about it, I think it's time to do something about it.
Councilwoman Kilpatrick.
Thank you. I was pretty much going along the same line. My only other question would be, is for this project, since we are in the middle of this project, is there the possibility of getting an exemption while we look at redoing the law? Would that be faster if you needed to be faster?
That's certainly an option, but we can't continue to meet these roadblocks whenever they occur, and we don't know when that's going to happen, and then to have people sitting around the room and everybody's got their arms tied behind their back and we can't move forward. It just doesn't make any sense.
Right. Well, when we talk about jobs over and over and over, and to have a project of this magnitude that we can't get anyone to work on, seems as if we are part of the problem with jobs rather than part of the solution.
I would agree.
Wayne Merritt, Social Services General Manager. We've had preliminary discussions with the law and with purchasing this specific issue once we found out it would be difficult to get anybody to be willing to bid. So we would anticipate in September, council comes back after the August break, we will have the Special Services review. We'll have a recommendation as to what we think might be effective.
Sure, you had the floor, Ray. I'll just let Councilwoman Kilpatrick and Smiley.
I was just going to say, if you're going to have law look at it and you're going to come back with something, I would think that that if you need something changed, that they should be writing an ordinance to go with it and come back with the full package, not just an opinion.
Well,
and that way we hit the ground running.
We'll continue.
Councilman Smiley and then Hollins.
I just think it would be helpful with what we're going to be looking at in the review that those carpenters that have opted out because of the apprenticeship program, if they would be willing to provide detail of what they found to be a hindrance of the program.
Councilman Hollins.
I think my issue was covered. Thank you.
Okay. I'll go to public, Lou Henkel.
Just a quick question. Do you think it would be beneficial to council to get copies of the needs assessments as they were presented through personal services to establish the repairs?
I'm sure that could be written, yeah.
There we go.
Sure, that can be emailed to everybody.
Thank you.
The pick back.
They're
massive. I'll probably have to get discs to everybody.
Or summaries would be great.
Maybe a summary. Cut it down to two pages.
We could have a summary version of it.
Yes.
Tracy Searles, just an observation, because there have been some comments about how onerous, establishing an apprenticeship program might be. And just observing the projects where we tend to see the bidders more affected, it would be an area where maybe the county only advertises something rarely, once every few years. Our trades, like the sewer rehabs and places where people see consistent bids and work, they tend to get it. But this is something a little bit unusual with the historical carpentry. And I'm not saying it's extremely onerous, but possibly it's enough that they don't feel it's worth it for one job that they don't even know they're going to get. They've got to be, low bid to get it. Does that mean? I just wanted to kind of give you my observations a little bit.
Well, I do say that, Tracy, we were involved. I mean, this is going back when the ordinance was passed. We always had contractor meetings once a year, and we explained what it was. We did the do's and outs and had the apprenticeship training from the state there to answer the questions. And I think that's why it started off pretty good, but I think we got away from it, too. I mean, I think there's ownership on all sides.
For sure.
So, just want to let reflect Bill Powers, just Councilman Powers has joined us. Anything else? We'll go under other. If not, motion for adjournment.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion made, second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
There are soft pretzels in